For those of you that don't know me, my name is Philip, and I want to tell you that I just really been loving this. You may not be used to being with us here at Metro. We meet here at 7 o'clock in the At Bristol Science Centre every single week. It's just like this. This is kind of us even more so, but it's pretty much just like this, and we gather together every week. But for me, this thing, I've just been loving it. I've been looking forward to this so much. I really love this stuff. I love Christmas. Now, the thing with you, particularly if you're new to us, if you're not used to coming to Metro, you're not used to being part of our little gatherings on Sunday evenings, if you're not used to church, you're expecting right now for me as a minister, a church minister in a carol service, to stand up and say a few words about how bad Christmas is. You're expecting me to grumble and complain and be down on the commercialism and the materialism and the crass, facile, superficial, weird nature of Christmas. But I'm not going to do that. Do you know why? Because I love it all. I love Christmas. I mean, I'm up for it. I'm totally up for it. Mince pies, mad uncles, Julie Andrews on the television. I love it. I am totally, totally up for it. They say that every man goes through three stages in life. Stage one, he believes in Father Christmas. Stage two, he doesn't believe in Father Christmas. Stage three, he is Father Christmas. And I've been through all of those phases, and I love it. I love Christmas. I love everything about it. I love the razzle-dazzle and the crazy stuff. I love the wacky stuff. I don't mind the cheesy Christmas number ones. I don't mind the kind of the weird turkey that we eat. We eat a meal that we never have at any other time in the year. You never eat this through choice. You know, the turkey. Turkey, the stuffing, the whole thing. But at Christmas, somehow, sprouts, we all eat sprouts. And I'm up for that. I'm okay. I'm not going to say that it's bad or that you shouldn't indulge in it or that you're somehow not spiritual or you're missing the real meaning of Christmas. I want to say to you, I love Christmas. I totally love it. I've always loved it. I will always love it. And I think I love it for the same reason that you love it. In fact, if I was to put that into one word, I'd say the thing that makes Christmas so Christmassy is light. We have sparkling fairy lights here this evening. We have disco moving lights this evening. And if you look out, and when we go onto the balcony later on for our buskers on the balcony, it's actually become a quintet. It grew. You will look out across the harbour. You'll see twinkling lights reflected in the water, and you'll see the cranes around the M shed bedecked with lights. And everywhere that you go in Bristol, and everywhere that you go anywhere in the world, you'll see lights. You'll see lights in the shopping centres, in the high streets. You'll see lights in the department stores, and you'll see a light in every single home. And people all over the world will keep their curtains open at Christmas because they want the lights that straddles their Christmas tree or the lights that are just scattered over their hedges to be seen by everybody, because Christmas is about light. It's like this kind of natural instinct that we have as people. I don't care whether you're religious, not sure, somewhere in between. Every single one of us, we have a kind of an instinct, a gut, something that reaches out, that longs for and yearns for light. We love Christmas because that's when we are at our most magical. That's when it's okay to think about the transcendent, the ethereal, the magical. That's why we tend to have those great sort of Julie Andrews films on Christmas Day. And, you know, Wallace and Gromit, even that kind of feels special. And don't get me started about Star Wars. They put Star Wars on in the cinema because that's what we want to key into. We want to key into a big story. We want to key into hope. We want to key into something that makes us feel good about ourselves and feel good about our lives, because the one thing that Christmas does, the one thing we need it so much for, is it ends our year in a kind of triumphant little pocket of hope. Now, I know that for some people, Christmas is a hard time. I know it can be a difficult time, a lonely time, a stressful time. But predominantly, when it works best, it brings out the best in us. It's some way of kind of drawing a line at the end of the year and hoping that maybe next year will be better. Because we look back at the year that's gone, and no matter how bad it has been, Christmas somehow gives us a moment to breathe, to pause, to reflect, to enjoy, to think good thoughts. And I tell you, if we ever needed light in the darkness. If we ever needed a little bit of lift and inspiration and hope, if we ever needed Christmas, it is this year. I mean, can we talk about 2016? I mean, what just happened? I mean, we started the year and it was like David Bowie died and we all felt a little bit sad. And then when Prince died, we thought, man, this is the saddest year ever. Little did we know, we would be served up a few short months later a full English Brexit. And we thought that was bad and we were recovering from it and thinking, well, you know, it'll be okay. And, you know, I guess some of you remained and some of you brevoted and Brexited and all of that stuff. But the fact is that suddenly those across the pond in America, they decided to plump for Trump. And you're thinking, what on earth is going on with this world? And now as we look at our world, as we look back over 2016, you just see it's grim. There's this sense that we have that, oh my goodness, what is happening? What's going to happen next? The European Union is crumbling and breaking. The pound is falling and dropping. There's not many silent nights in Aleppo right now. We're in the full-blown throes of a massive refugee crisis. The Syrian conflict has entered its sixth year. Even football, I mean, unbelievable. Even in football, where we want to have entertainment and distraction and a break from reality, even in football, and a horrendous story is just unfolding. And, you know, for those people who maybe a little while ago were pointing the finger and maybe slightly enjoying the fact that you could point at some parts of the church and say, hey, listen, you had bad things happen over here. You must be bad. And now in football, it's teaching us all bad people are everywhere. Bad people will always go into good places to do bad things. I don't know what your 2016 has been like, but for most of us, the global picture, well, do you know what it is? It's what the Bible would call darkness. When I say darkness, I don't just mean evil and horror. What I mean is you can't see when you're in a dark room. If you walk down a dark alley, you're wary because you don't know what's going to come out of the shadows. When there's darkness, it means that you don't know where the direction is that you should be heading. You're not sure about what is what and what to head for and what to put your faith in and what to put your trust in because you don't know where things are headed. And right now, we've got darkness. We don't know what's going to happen. We have people making all kinds of forecasts. We're hoping that it won't be so bad. But we're thinking about climate change. We're thinking about the economics. We're thinking about our own futures. And maybe on a small personal scale, you're thinking about your own family or your relationships. You're thinking about your job, your career. And, you know, we experience this kind of, I'm not sure where it's all going. It's darkness. And that's why in the middle of darkness, we want light. That's why Christmas is so powerful, it's so potent for us, because it's all about light coming into the darkness. And that passage that we read earlier at the very beginning from John, he says that the light, the true light that gives light to everyone, was coming into the world. And the message of Christmas is basically that within our darkness, within our uncertainty, within our insecurity, and within the kind of the murk and the fog of everyday existence, there is a God. And he is the light of all, the light of the world. And this light came down into our darkness to bring illumination so that in the midst of difficulty, suffering, and hard questions, we would be able to see a way to move forward. See, this is what brings us to the Magi. I just want to say a little bit about the Magi before we carry on with our service. Because the Magi are really interesting. We don't really know very much about the Magi. In fact, the passage that Karis has just read, that there's some title that we know about the Magi, sometimes translated wise men. All we know about them is this. It says that the Magi, Magi from the East came to Jerusalem. So four words, Magi from the East. That's it. That's all we know about them. And because of this, people make stuff up. Honestly, I'm a Christian minister. I can say this. If you're not a church person, if you're not used to church, you've been brought along by a friend, let me tell you, this is the inside scoop. Christian people make a lot of stuff up, okay? They're well-meaning, but they're trying to bulk up the story and make something up. And so you've got all this stuff. You've heard the carol. I banned it, but I think we might be doing it on the balcony because I still like the tune. And so when we're not singing it, we'll busk it. But I banned it. We three kings of Orient are. Who knows that song? Okay, This is crazy. Because we talked about this last year, last week. We talk about the fact that it's fairly accurate, apart from the fact that there weren't three of them, they weren't kings, and they definitely weren't from the Orient. But apart from that, it's a banging tune. But you have this whole thing of, you know, there must be three because they had three gifts. Well, then three gifts, one carries one each. No, we don't know. They certainly weren't kings. They weren't from the Orient. They were from the East. Okay, but we have these kind of fantasies, and people want to make a card look nice. They want the nativity play to look nice. You've got to give little Jimmy a named part if they're going to be a wise man. They can't just be magi. We don't know who they are. They're kind of from the East. And so you have this thing, you know, Melchior, Caspar, Balthazar, totally made up. You know, like you expect this guy, and they've all got ornate robes, big hat. I am Melchior, the wise. I am Caspar, the friendly ghost. I am Balthazar, the black one. Made up, totally made up. Not true. The rest of the Christmas story is totally specific, okay? You want to know about Joseph? Here's his family tree for 14 generations. You want to know about Mary? Here's her lineage all the way down to David. You want to know about Herod? Well, he's right there in this story, and we know all about him. All the different people and all the different places, all the different connection points, they're all detailed. But when it comes to the Magi, it just says, Magi from the East. Why is that? Why does the Bible hold back? I'll tell you why. It's because he's being deliberately vague. Because you're supposed to identify with the Magi. Because face it, everyone is from the East of somewhere, right? So all of us get to be the Magi. All of us get to experience what it is to be in their shoes. Essentially, with the Magi, what you're talking about is you're talking about probably astrologers. They could have been from Jordan, or they could have been from modern-day Iraq. They could have been from Iran. We really don't know. It's like the Bible keeps it deliberately vague, because the writer says, listen, never mind about the rest of it. This is you. You're the Magi. The Magi were basically astrologers, which was, in those days, astronomy and astrology weren't two separate things. It wasn't like science and superstition. It was all mixed in together in some kind of unholy mess. They had a kind of primitive scientific view. And these guys, they would look into the darkness, and they would look for light, and they would look for signs, and they would look for hope, and they would look for something that's going to bring some kind of insight into the life that we live in, the world that we live in. So if you have ever looked up at the night sky and thought, I wonder what it all means, then you're the Magi. If you've ever looked at the world and thought the world is dark and the world is uncertain and the world has such potential and yet there's such unhappiness and injustice and pain, if you've ever felt like that and thought there must be more, you're the Magi. And if you've ever had a yearning within you, a yearning even just to worship something bigger than yourself, to have a life. It's not just about the 9-to-5, the rat race, the humdrum, the get it done and enjoy your life on the weekend. If you've had any kind of an urge inside of you that there's got to be more to life, then you are the Magi. The Magi stand for everybody that has a spiritual hunger. The Magi weren't sort of regular Jewish people. Okay, so they weren't the normal religious types. Almost certainly never picked up a Bible in their lives. And that might be you. You may be here, some faith, little faith, no faith, different faith. But inside us all, we're all the Magi. We're all looking for something. But the difference with these guys, these Magi, is that they went on a spiritual journey. They started off where they were, and what they looked out, and where they looked at the world and where they looked to the stars, something caught their attention. They thought, there's got to be more. In fact, they had an inkling that there is a God, that there is the divine, that he's not just a petty dictator, demon, idol God, but that there is the ethereal, the transcendent, the one that is above all, the one that is beyond time and space and matter. And then there's that heart within us that just cries out, is drawn. So these guys, they go on a journey, and they've got enough to know that they think it's somewhere in the land of the Jews. And they go. And actually, the reality is, they make a mistake. They go to the wrong place. They don't get it right. They're so close, but they're just trying. They've got a little bit of a hunch, an idea that I might find answers here. And they naturally go to Jerusalem because that's the city of the kings, and that's where they expect a king to be born. But that's not where Jesus is. And so their first spiritual journey, they get into this kind of quandary because they've gone to the wrong place, and now they don't know where to turn. And it looks like their journey has stuttered to a stop, that it's run out of steam. It may be that for you, you're not a Christian, or you're not sure you're a Christian, or maybe you used to be a Christian, you used to go to church, and you got to a certain point where you were looking for answers, you had this spiritual urge, and you looked in a certain place, and you thought, I expected to find it here, and I don't find it here. No, I don't know what to do. For some of you, you may have looked for it in a career. For some of you, you may have looked for it in a relationship. For some of you, you may have looked in terms of, you know, fun and enjoyment and or even accumulating stuff and all these things. You know as well as I do, we try these things. They don't satisfy. They don't ultimately meet that transcendent need in the human heart. And for some of you, it's even been religion. It's even been church. And the reason that you were slightly wary about coming tonight is that you've been to the church thing before and it let you down. It didn't take you far enough. And you're like the Magi because they get to this one destination. They think this is where it's going to happen. This is where it's going to make sense. And it doesn't work out for them. And listen, you may have had a church experience in the past with all the best intentions in the world. Didn't really work out for you. And now you don't know where to turn. But it's interesting what happens with the Magi. It says this. It says that they asked, where is the one who's been born king of the Jews? In other words, when they got to this place where they didn't know any further to go, they began to ask questions. They didn't just give up and go home. They asked questions. They said, look, we've come to this place. We thought this was the place, but we need help. We need to investigate. And the weirdest thing is this comes to the attention of King Herod himself, who's a dictator, you know, a mad, crazy dictator. We're talking slaughter your sons, kill your wives, protect your position, bad man. And they are drawn into his presence, maybe slightly unwillingly. But he says this weird, ironic thing. He says, go and search carefully for the child. He gets his priests, the religious people, and they do actually open the Bible. And they say, well, actually, 700 years ago, the prophet Micah spoke about the Messiah to be born, said he would be in Bethlehem. So in our terms, that's a bit like someone consulting the works of Geoffrey Chaucer and looking in Chaucer's Canterbury Tales and finding some obscure reference and saying, yeah, Bethlehem, finding an answer. And so the Bible people, they do come through, but they don't want to look. They're just happy to give a theological, theoretical answer. But Herod says, look for Jesus and look carefully and search until you find him. And then it says that we don't know what the star was, but somehow they were led to Bethlehem. They go to Bethlehem and they find the child. And it says, when they find Jesus, they're overjoyed and they bowed down and worshipped him. I'm going to wrap this up, but I just want to leave this with you. Wouldn't you like to have something in your life that made you overjoyed? And I'm not just talking about the good highlight reel of life. I'm not talking about the first kiss or the first child or the first pay rise or the first dance or whatever. I'm talking about encountering the transcendent. I'm talking about connecting with that thing that your heart yearns for and finding that thing and being overjoyed, being able to worship, knowing that you found God himself. Because that's ultimately, when we talk about the Christmas story, we talk about God coming down into human form, the infinite becoming finite, the immortal becoming mortal flesh, weak and frail and dependent. And this child who fashioned the stars into being is now formed and can be picked up and worshipped and adored. And actually, next week, Chloe, who's been leading our service, she's going to finish our Magi trilogy. We started last week. This is the kind of the intense middle section. She's finishing off the trilogy next week. So please do come back, because she's going to tell you exactly what gold, frankincense, and myrrh looks like. But I just want to leave you with this thing. That is a wonderful thing. And I don't want to push anything down on you, but I do want to say with total sincerity and a complete, as much humility as I can find, I know what it is to be on a spiritual journey. And I know that when I met Jesus, my life was never the same again. That I know what it's like to be overjoyed and to experience his presence. It's like a cloud of smoke that comes and overwhelms you, surprises you, engulfs you, obscures you. But seriously, overjoy. Wouldn't you like that in your life? And this is my point. It may be difficult, there may be ups and downs, but going on a spiritual journey is the best thing that you could ever do. And you're already on a spiritual journey. Maybe your spiritual journey has brought you here to this point right now. Maybe you find that you're coming somewhere along. And as we've been singing, there's part of you that's thinking, gosh, this could be somewhere where I could find some next steps in my journey. And I want to tell you this, the journey is worth it. The journey is absolutely worth it. It's worth the twists and the turns. It's worth the wrong turns. It's worth the discouragement. It takes courage. It takes guts. It takes the ability to pursue something when all these things in life want to distract you, turn you away, just push you in a different direction, eat, drink, be merry, have another mince pie. But it's worth pursuing the spiritual side of life because the journey is worth it because Jesus is worth it. We're going to pray right now, and I'm going to invite you to pray a simple prayer. It's like a Christmas prayer, a prayer that says, Jesus, I want you to help me on my spiritual journey. And then we're going to sing our final three carols, and then we go onto the balcony, and you have that wonderful view of light. But just two things to tell you about. First of all, if you're not a church person, you're not used to this, or maybe you're kind of finding your way back, we would love for you to take on your way out. And it's completely up to you. We won't monitor it. We won't push them on you. We won't force you. But they're just on the table in the entrance as you go out. It's a discovery pack. It's got a few things. There's a little letter from me. There's a Luke's gospel, which tells the story of the little people and how they were impacted by that message. It's also got a little booklet that says, Why Christmas? It's got some fantastic, hilarious facts about Christmas in, but also a little bit of explanation of the Christmas story. And the best place that I know to ask questions is a thing called Alpha. Put your hands up if you've heard of an Alpha course. Fantastic. Now, we start our next Alpha course on January the 25th. I'll be there. Basically, you have a meal, you meet some people, there's a speaker, good-looking, gorgeous speaker. I'm one of the speakers. And just joking. But there's a speaker, and then there's a chance to be in a group with people like you who are asking questions like you and to figure things out. It lasts for 10 weeks. You come to the very first one, you don't like it, just don't come back again. It's free. You've got nothing to lose, everything to gain. And so I'd love for you to take one of these discovery packs and actually to take a little flyer, to sign yourself up for Alpha. Take a look on our website. And then finally, the second thing, we kick off next year, January, with a spiritual detox diet. And we're going to be examining what it looks like, you know, in real terms, to be on a spiritual journey and to kind of key into some of these ancient disciplines and practices. So that's what I'd like to encourage you to. And I guess just to be around with us, you know, we'll be here like this next week. The band will be here, the lights will be here, all the same stuff. Chloe's going to be speaking, closing up our trilogy, and it's going to be really good. This is what we do. This is what we are. We're not wanting to push anything on anybody, but we have made our stall that we want to be a church that anybody can come to and a church that anybody can bring their friend to. And if you were brought along by a friend, they're doing what we want them to do because that's why we made this place. That's why we do this thing. It's for you. And so this is a great place to make a spiritual journey. Let's pray, and then we'll get the band up and we'll continue. In fact, we will kick it up a notch and there will be shenanigans. So why don't you close your eyes and let's pray. Dear God, I thank you. I thank you for the joy of Christmas. I thank you for the wonder of Christmas. I thank you for the light of Christmas. And I thank you that in all the kind of the crazy commercial stuff, it does point us towards a greater reality. That all of us are drawn towards the sublime. All of us want something to bring us hope and light in a dark situation. And I pray, dear God, that there will be people in this room that take another step on their spiritual journey as a result of tonight, that you'd be with us, that you'd help us, and that, Lord Jesus, you would shine your light into our lives. In the name of Jesus.